The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants based on their personal and or professional experience with grief and bereavement. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Lighthouse Beacon podcast. My name is Rami Shami, and I'll be your host for these podcasts. A little background about our organization. We're located in Oakville, Ontario, Canada, but we can provide our services to the Greater Toronto area. We offer facilitated grief peer support groups to help children, youth, teens, and their families through grieving following a death in their family. Our groups are ongoing and open-ended, which offers each family member an opportunity to participate in their own unique way. We launched these podcasts some time ago. Now we're past our 1,000th download, which is pretty cool, in an effort to create a greater awareness, not only in children's grief, but to the diversity within children's grief. But before we begin today, I think it's an imperative and it's important that we share a land acknowledgement. My parents are refugees and immigrants. They came to this land not knowing the harm and genocide and murder and trauma that's been incurred by Indigenous peoples for millennia. I acknowledge the land I'm standing on today is a traditional territory of many nations, including the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Anishinaabe, the Chippewa, the Haudenosaunee, and the Wendat peoples, and is now home to many diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples. I also acknowledge that Toronto is covered by Treaty 13 signed with the Mississaugas of the Credit and the Williams Treaty signed with the multiple Mississaugas and Chippewa bands. Our very special guest today is Delaney Jordana Holness. She's 21 years old and has recently graduated from McMaster University with an honors Bachelor of Arts in Health and Society, specialized in mental health and addiction. In her final year of study, she wrote her undergraduate thesis on grief in the Black community, supervised by our former Director of Services, Candice Ray. Delaney is passionate about helping her own community and other racialized and marginalized groups academically within her career and through volunteering. Welcome, Delaney.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So where to begin, Delaney? I want to begin, actually. May I ask about your name? Like, how did you receive your name? Is there any story or meaning behind it? My name's Rami, which is a means of high village in Israel. So is there any, may I ask if there's any context to your name?
I guess the only real context for my name is that my mom was listening to a pianist play, and their last name was Delaney, and she really liked the name, but I think it suits me really well. I know it is like an Irish name, I believe, Irish or Scottish, something like that, but it means challenger. And I really resonated with that when I was younger, because it reminded me that every challenge that I faced, to just face it head on. And I really resonated with that when I was younger. And I think now, I guess I for a while, I forgot the meaning of my name and why it was important to me. And now, like, as I've gotten a little bit older and like had time to really like learn about myself, and I realized like that name is actually quite perfect for me, and through like the experiences that I've had and like the career that I want to see for myself and like the world that I hope to be able to contribute to in a career or just as a person, is that of someone who's a challenger, someone who is strong and who can kind of follow through. So that kind of definition of my name suits me and my character quite well.
Yeah, it sounds like it, Delaney. Sounds like it. Can I ask a little bit about how you want to be as a challenger, especially from a career social justice perspective? Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I guess for me, like being a challenger is constantly looking to better yourself. And it's more so than just kind of keep going. I guess like that was a kind of how I went along, especially in university. I just kept going. If I got a bad grade on something, I just kept moving, kept going forward over and over again. But I think actually being a challenger and doing that for my personal life looks like evaluating what's going on for myself over and over again. And if it needs to have a pivot, if I need to go in a different direction, I do that. Like a lot of times I would avoid that, and I would just keep pushing and keep pushing and pushing, or I would stay in a job that I really didn't like, or all of those things, and it actually wasn't beneficial and it wasn't to my benefit. And it's scary to make that change and make that turn, but I've been learning that those are the best moments of my life when I decided that this is what I'm doing for me. And so that was like where I was like challenging what I guess I felt like I was supposed to do, or what my career and what my life is supposed to look like rather than what I want it to look like. And I found that that was where like Challenger kind of came into play. Does that make sense?
I think so, Delaney. I think I could resonate very strongly with that, because how amazing is it when you can align your life vocation, your life purpose, who you are, your even your name, your identity, your character, when they all align, and then you get to do that for a living and get paid for it, you know, like,
yeah,
that's the ultimate. It's not, I think that's what you're speaking to, right?
Yeah. I'm hoping that will look like. I'm in, like, as you said, I'm in my early 20s, and right now I'm being a little bit more selfish and just kind of figuring out myself. And I've been lucky to have jobs where I get to parts of my character are useful, and my passions are used, and my like morals are aligned with the jobs that I'm doing. And I know that that is very much a privilege, and not everybody gets to do that. So I really am taking this time right now in like, kind of, someone said this is that your 20s are like a dressing room, and you get to decide what you get to put on when you open that door and walk out, and what you're going to be. So I've been really, really taking that to heart and trying my best to do that as well.
Well, you know, respectfully, I don't think that's selfish at all. That depth of self-awareness to recognize that you're aligning in multiple spheres in your life, that's a maturity beyond somebody who's in their 20s. So well done, Delaney. Well done.
Thank you.
If we could speak a little bit more, you know, you mentioned passion. Can you speak a little bit more about this passion that you have for helping your own community? However, and if you could expand on what you consider and identify as your community, as well as groups who experience marginalization and racialization.
Yeah. So for me, my passion, I guess I'll start with where I figured out that what I was doing was helping, because for a long time, I just was doing what I can. I used to volunteer just for my dance studio and for my gymnastics place that I used to go to all the time. And I absolutely loved it. And I loved like helping somebody doing a gymnastics trick or learn a dance move, or like the little kids in there learning their dance was a really big thing. And I realized that I enjoy helping children. I enjoy helping my friends and my peers like get better in life. And then when I came to university, that I learned about how the structures that are in place and how that can be applied in a systemic sense. And so I naturally always loved to help people, and I didn't even realize it was that until I got to university and I was like, oh, like this thing that I love to do, and I love to give advice, I love to help people find resources that help them out. Especially at Mac, like they have a very culture that's about like helping students, helping other students, and helping you find your future and find your way. So that was like a perfect thing for me. And I realized I had a passion for helping others. And then when learning about through my program and my degree, learning about health and society, I've been able to see it not only on like a personal level, but how it is systemic or on a macro lens as well. So there's so many different levels to what helping is. And I found that for me, like that just aligned with who I am. I don't really think I fostered a passion. I guess it was just already there. And then for my community, I guess I do identify as a Black woman. So I didn't know what that meant, again, really, until I got to university and I was sitting in one of my courses and we were talking about how in the healthcare system, Black women face a lot of pain and heartache, and it's how scary it is. Like even just random things that you don't think about, like when we think about having a baby, I guess it's not really a random thing, but sometimes we think about it in a passive sense, and what that is for Black women is completely different than what it is for other people within the healthcare system and the treatment and how you have conversations about your health. So it was really, really scary for me, and I'm sure a lot of other Black women can relate to that, that it's kind of terrifying to have somebody telling you how you're going to be treated in a hospital and how you're going to be treated in the healthcare system and in society in general. And that was something that I didn't know. As much as I was aware of it in my day-to-day, I really didn't understand the gravity or how much that was based in the structures of our society until I got to university. And I really took the time and was able, given the opportunity, to keep focusing on that and keep learning about it and have those conversations with other Black women specifically and other people from other racialized groups and marginalized people who are also looking at the same things and who recognize my struggle or the struggle that I will be continuing to face as I grow up as a Black woman. So yeah, that's my community, and I guess that's my passion too.
I can hear it in your voice, Delaney. I can't begin to match the experience of a Black woman within healthcare. I mean, I've had the privilege and honor of working with several Black women or women of color who have been my directors and my bosses and my colleagues. And they've told me stories. They've shared with me what their experiences are within healthcare, working in healthcare, receiving healthcare, but to actually experience it firsthand. I can hear the passion in your voice. So if we can expand that a little bit more, I assume, I mean, part of the reason we do these podcasts is to bring light to these kinds of systemic issues. I would assume these experiences would extend to working within grief or receiving grief support. Am I right?
Yes, you are. You're very correct. When you're someone who's in a marginalized group or you are like racialized, it is not something that you just experience like if you were to go to the grocery store, and not when you go to the gym or not when you go to other places within your town. It's every second of every single day. I don't take off this. It's not like a mask that I put on and I'm a Black woman when I go into a hospital, but everywhere else I'm treated like everybody else. Like, I'm always a Black woman, and that's always what I look like, what I feel like. And for a lot of it, it can be very empowering, but it's also a constant fight because you have a lot of stress that comes with that. And especially in grief, that's one of the points that I make within my thesis, that it's a lot of the stress that comes with these unique aspects of grief, specifically for Black people, that we're not really aware about. So I definitely think that this extends to Black grief. For me, it's not like I just am a Black woman when I go to certain places, like within my town. I'll put it as a little analogy. I'm not just a Black woman when I go to the grocery store. I'm not just a Black woman when I go to the gym. I'm a Black woman when I wake up in the morning until the end of the night and so forth. Even in my dreams, I'm always going to be a Black woman. And so you don't really have the opportunity to know what other people's treatment looks like and what that feels like for them. And I think it's the same when we think about grief as well. We are not offered the opportunity to look at these unique aspects of grief. And for Black people, for brown people, for anyone, everybody, we just kind of give them like a one size fits all. And that really doesn't work, because this one size fits all idea that we have is what our society looks like now, where there's lots of people who are looking and begging essentially for attention from our government and who aren't included in the policies that are made, and we're having housing crises and we're all on all fronts. This one size fits all approach to life, society, structures and systems doesn't work. And unfortunately, I'm being one of the a marginalized group, being a Black woman, while it is sometimes unfortunate that we receive certain treatments, I will never say like my experience as a Black woman has been anything other than empowering and like strong and putting forth this view on the world that I don't even know like what it would be to be anybody else. And I would never even want that. I wouldn't switch trade my cards for the world. But I do think that this one size fits all feeling that I have as a Black woman is felt by so many others. And if you're marginalized, if it's due to your race and your what you look like, or if it's because of your income status, or is it because of if you have migrated to Canada, like so many different reasons, but that one size fits all approach hurt so many people for so many different aspects. And a lot of times that's intersecting, and a lot of times that's could be a Black woman who is in a low income status and has migrated to Canada. Like, there are so many different things. So I do think that it does apply to all fronts, and grief is just one of those areas.
Wonderfully articulated, Delaney. Wonderfully articulated. I couldn't agree more. I've heard from several organizations who claim, you know, we are inclusive. And then when you question them, why is your programming not geared to the experiences of people of color, or people who are racialized and marginalized? How can you claim to be inclusive when, anyways, I could go on and on about it. So I really appreciate you reflecting in that regard. I think a lot of grief support, especially in Southern Ontario or Ontario, is very one size fits all. You know, this truly the person-centered, this not the I see no color perception, but the fact that we're able to garner what it is to be a person of color, what it is to be somebody Black, and to provide the grief support that is meaningful and aligned with who and what they are. So if we can, Delaney, can we expand a little bit on, you said it a little while ago, Black grief, or grief for Black people or people of color. Can you expand on what that really means and what that is in your perception and your idea?
Yeah, so it's kind of, in layman's terms, it's simply just how Black people are grieving, and what loss looks like and feels like, and is how it is expressed through a Black person. And I think the reason why it's necessary is because, again, because of kind of what we've been already talking about, that there is a one size fits all, and we're not recognizing that grief for Black people, for the Black community, is different. And it is not to say anything that is better or worse, or that we need more or less. We just need to be recognized for these differences, much like everybody else. So there's been lots of studies, and most of the time it's coined as a term as Black grief, but it's really just looking at how Black people experience loss, are what that looks like for them, and based on a variety of factors, because as Black people, as a community, puts into a group so many other identities, people, classes, there's so many different experiences within the Black community, but it's just one way to kind of group that all together.
Yeah, thank you, Delaney. Can I ask you, generally, to expand on what it means in your perspective to grieve as a Black person? How is it different? How is it different from the cookie cutter, one size fits all?
Yeah. So as much as for me, in my personal experience, grieving, some people have talked about grieving while Black. And just one really, really powerful example in my experience was in 2020, when we were all going through the pandemic, and there was a really big boom for the Black Lives Matter movement, and after the passing of George Floyd. And I had conversations with other, it wasn't the first time that I'd seen police brutality and seen it on social media, but it was one of the first times it's been so influential on social media and had such a big calling to the entire world, essentially, and but also the Black community. But what we see and what we learn about that instance is that for many people, they were like, oh, that's really sad and unfortunate, and that's awful that person was, life was diminished as a result of police brutality. But for me, as a Black person, and for other Black people, you saw yourself in that instance. It could have been you, because what's the only reason for what happened was because he was Black. And I'm also just, I'm Black. And again, as I said before, I don't take that off. I'm Black all the time. There's nothing you can do about that. There's nothing I can change about that. I can't make myself more palatable, and I wouldn't want to. I can't make myself appeal more. Like, there's nothing I can do. It's a visible thing. I'm Black. There's nothing I can do. And unfortunately, it makes me stutter, and it makes me very, I guess it's hesitant, because it is such a really big topic. That parasocial connection that a Black person has to another Black person, seeing another Black person being murdered, is intense. And because we have a history through slavery and oppression, and it's geographical. It's in all aspects of the way that this country is built and North America in general is built and is sustained, that we are facing these oppressions and microaggressions on a day-to-day basis, and this kind of just feels like an inevitable. So there's a lot of feelings that come with grieving, and that is a person, George Floyd, as the example that I was talking about, isn't somebody that I know. I've never met them, never met his family, never met anybody, but I felt lost in a very intimate way when he was murdered. And the same every single time, day to day, when I see it happen on social media, every time I get that gut-wrenching feeling, it feels like a mother or a father or a brother has, I feel that loss, that same amount of loss. And I think that that's an aspect of Black grieving that is very unique. And I'm, as much as I do believe other races and cultures do experience that, this is just where I put my focus in. But that's just an example of how it is unique.
Yeah, thank you, Delaney. I can't begin to imagine. Is that a form of trauma? Is that a form of traumatization that ends up complicating experiences of grief?
Yeah, so I will speak to what I understand right now, because this is such a, there is very small amounts of research to such a really vast, wide, big topic. So I don't know much about trauma. I don't really have a background, and I haven't put a lot of time in the focus on trauma. My thesis really focused on loss and what that looks like, and the various ways that we experience loss for Black people specifically. I think I wanted to comment on why I wouldn't always say that it is something that is traumatic, like based in trauma. I think there are fears. I guess it's not necessarily trauma, because it wasn't always something that is based in what happened in the past. It's happening right now. And to say that it would be trauma, kind of implies that it isn't occurring at this very moment, but those oppressions are current, and we see them, that they will occur in the future. And if the policies that we see being put in place, even by America at the moment, are any gauge on how the future is going to go, we are going to continue to see oppressions, and we're going to continue to be left out. And so I wouldn't always say that it is trauma that you're living through. I don't really have another term to coin it as that, but I would be very wary to coin it as that, because that would put it kind of in that sphere of this is more of a mental health issue rather than this is a social issue. And I want to make sure that things like Black grief and grief in general are looked at through a social lens. And that's where I like to focus on, because in doing that, it results in policy changes. It results in uplifting of so many other people. And that's something that I thought was really important too, that to highlight, and we can probably talk about it more later, but highlighting that by focusing on Black grief, we also, by me focusing on Black grief, and maybe somebody else focusing on grief for Muslim women or other groups of people, we come together and we'll have policies that help to move the baseline from where it is right now up 10 feet or whatever it is. And it does end up helping the baseline for everybody else. And I think that is the most important thing. And I want to highlight that, and I'll probably highlight that over and over again, because it's something that people do miss, and people don't take the time to acknowledge in the same way. They kind of look at these things as kind of like charity work that they don't have a payoff for you if you don't belong to my community. If you're not a Black person, if you're not a Black woman, then what I'm doing and then you helping me with what I'm doing doesn't have a payoff for you. But in reality, it actually does. And it might seem like a zero-sum issue and a zero-sum thing for other people who are not within my community, but by putting emphasis and research and time and effort into this as a social issue, we bring up the bar for everybody else every single time.
Thank you for that insight and clarification, Delaney. Well, then let's get into your thesis. on grief in the Black community. Can you share with us information about it, how it came about, your conclusions? Can we get into that?
Yeah, for sure. Starting my thesis was a very stressful process, and it actually started 2 years ago. So it started my third year, at the end of my third year of university, and a couple of my friends had already found their thesis supervisor, and I was freaking out all summer. And my friends, some of my really close friends are older than I am. And they took me out for like a picnic. We all went on a little picnic and we were all talking about our careers because we're all in social science programs. And so we were just all talking about what we're interested in, what we're going to do. And they had already graduated or were just going into their final year of university as well. So we were all talking about what we were interested in. And we just so happened to pass Lighthouse on the way back from the picnic. And I was like,
synchronicity.
Right? It was a random coincidence. I was like, that is exactly what I want to do. And after talking, it was my friend Carol and my friend Tatiana. And they were talking about what they were interested in. And we had a whole conversation about like all these different areas that we wanted to focus on and how we were going to pull. They were going to pull psychology, and for Carol was going to do psychology, and Tatiana focuses on criminology and other vulnerable populations. And then I had no idea what I was going to do. And then we all kind of just saw it on our way, and we were all like, oh, that's perfect. That is perfect for you. So I sent in an email and I gave them a call, and I was paired up with Candace, and she said that she'd help me out, and I had a conversation with her, and it went fantastic. And then I got to tour Lighthouse in the facility and learn about how they do things, and I was blown away. I can't even express that enough. I was blown away about how amazing and like the work that you guys do is truly incredible. So I knew I wanted to help out, even if it was just in a few small interventions, but do what I could. And then my thesis came about after that. We had a seminar where we had people come in and we talked about Black grief and what that looked like, and that was a really great conversation. And since then I've been still continuing like my passion for helping the Black community and being of service to the Black community that has supported me in all of my endeavors. So yeah,
I remember Candace letting me know that she had met you. She was so excited. She says, Rami, you have to meet this woman. You have to meet this woman. And she told me like three or four times over 3 or 4 days. And you got to put her on, you got to have her on your podcast or on our podcast. So, and I'm excited that here we are. All right, Delaney, I really want to get into your thesis, your knowledge, your expertise, your generosity in sharing your wisdom. I really want to hear about your thesis. And I know it's entitled Black Bereavement, an Exploration into Black Grief and Grief Support Organizations. So wherever you'd like to begin with your thesis, I'd love for our listeners to hear about what you've researched, what you've come up with, what your results were, whatever you'd like to share with us.
Yeah. So my thesis was involved a lot of parts. It's for undergraduate students at McMaster in my program. It's a year long. The students did it individually. So there are different types of theses that people went through, and I chose to do one in collaboration with a public service. So for me, my thesis doesn't look the same as some of the other ones and some traditional ones, but it does follow the same structure, so I think that'll help people to understand it a little bit better. So it started off with a literature review, and I compiled a lot of different articles and from different journals talking about Black grief. And from that review, was able to understand and focus my attention for what I want to speak about in this thesis and how I was going to use it towards and it creating interventions for Lighthouse and doing an evaluation and what that would look like. So the literature review was a big bulk part of my thesis, and it was really important because it guided the direction of the rest of my work for that year. And it involved looking at a lot of different things, actually. I looked at Black grief and the history of Black grief, and like the historical aspects of it, And then I also looked at the Dougie Center and their history and how it relates to the Black community, and did the across analysis of both. And this was a really important part because it was one of the essential features to know why Black grief wasn't being supported in the best ways, or how it can be, how the support offered through like the Dougie Center literature, which is used by Lighthouse, can be bettered for Black grief specifically, and how it could support Black people who are grieving and experiencing loss and who need that assistance, help, guidance, and support. So that was like a really crucial part. And I looked very critically at everything that was said and what they talked about and the different factors that they used to understand the cultural differences for grieving. And it is quite brief, which was one of my greatest critiques, that there just wasn't enough. It wasn't helpful enough, because these are such big topics, and Black people are just one group of people. And again, it was kind of leaning into that one size fits all again, where they acknowledge and it's like, you guys can come along for the ride with us. But it wasn't enough to say that it wasn't enough, because these issues and the reasons why we feel left out, left behind, and not within the one size fits all like support, was because these are issues that are systemic, and this is the only, I'm not sure what version of the Dougie Center literature this is, but this isn't the first version, I don't believe. And so you do have to go back and you have to unpackage those things to understand it. So that was one of my biggest critiques. And then I also looked at different social determinants of grief, like environment, socioeconomic status, and community grief and community level grieving, which I kind of talked about earlier, which I looked at parasocial grief and how we grieve with people that we don't even know, that are so far away and that we're only seeing through social media, and what that looks like and why that is something that we need to be focusing on and requires a lot of time. And then within my literature review section, I also talk about the feminist framework and social work framework and those critiques, which is personally one of my absolute favorite parts of my thesis, because it really does something that I really take with me and was a big takeaway. And kind of social work is built on these foundations of helping others, and that because of the way it's built and because it is based in whiteness, we lose so many people and we're not actually helping everybody. Because if you're only helping one group of people and everybody else kind of gets help but not the help that they need, then how are you actually helping? So that is one of my favorite sections. And if I could just like put one section on billboards, that would probably be it, because the feminist framework and the social work framework really help to ground my work and ground my thinking and how I critique and understand how Lighthouse works. So it helped me to know that there's so much. And that's why when I went that, I was like my jaw was basically on the floor. But how you guys do the work that you do is incredibly valuable and so well done. And you are thinking about the right things and doing the right things and trying these new things, taking new angles. And as you talked about before, when I say like I'm a challenger, I've really felt that Lighthouse is made up and supported by and continuing because of challengers. Like, you guys make an effort to take those turns, and when things aren't working, you invite more people to give you guidance in how to do things, which is so fantastic and made my life a lot easier. So, but I use the feminist and the social work critiques really do help to understand what is doing great and what should be continued, and then what kind of needs to be broken down and repackaged, changed, and rebuilt to help fill in these gaps that I had identified. And then that was my literature review. This is a 40-page thesis. So as
much, oh, I know. Oh, I know.
Lot,
I read it.
A lot of,
I read it.
There's a lot of content. So after that, after finishing, I was created some guiding questions that I won't really speak to them here because they were just helping to keep my thesis on track and keeping what I was focusing on very direct, which was really helpful. And then I moved into an evaluation, and I focused my evaluation on the Dougie Center literature, which I kind of spoke to a little bit before. And then I also broke down the Lighthouse website, because that's, for a lot of people, I'm assuming, because that's the first place that I went to when I saw the sign. When I drove by with my friends, I looked you guys up on the internet, one of the internet browsers, and that, so my first introduction to Lighthouse was the website. So that was an important place for me to look. And I highlighted a lot of the great, wonderful things that people that on your team have put together that make Lighthouse what it is and work amazingly how it does. But I also identified some gaps. And one of those gaps was the lack of Black authors and the Black books about Black grief specifically within the Lighthouse Library resources. So that was something that was important, and that is like great to add suggestions, and it was a great place to look and see, because you could have a tangible, like a number to it. You could see on a number how many Black books are in this library and how many books in these libraries for each category there are in total. So I made that into a figure, and I included that in my research. And I also looked at the volunteer training booklet. Candace was so nice and gave me the physical copy to look at. And then I returned that to her once I had finished, and I had highlighted, not on the physical copy, but I just took notes of what was really important, what was absolutely wonderful, what gaps that I had identified, and kind of went through the same process that I did with the website. I just highlighted some things that I thought needed to be changed and could be better. And then that led me to my results. And from my results, I created 4 interventions. So the first intervention was a book list to add for the children and teen, because I had one of these, it's a small point, but I thought it was really important to include in my thesis. And that's what a lot of my thesis kind of felt like, small but powerful points. And it was just noting that when you put something out that is supposed to be like what about like a visibility, and they had one story that had a Black character on the cover page, but the author is white. And while the book, yes, is great for visibility for Black people, and it's great that author and the illustrator in collaboration decided that that was what they wanted to go for, and they wanted to do something that was different, and that is very nice, but it doesn't encapsulate Black culture, and it doesn't look at what Black grieving looks like for Black people, because it is not from that lens. So it was just a critique about finding stories of Blackness, not only for visibility's sake, but also for the experience and what that is culturally for people who are Black, and for other groups of people as well, that keeping that same idea of not only Black invisibility, but Black inexperience for people and children, especially to learn about, because that is a big influence for them. So I included some books for the children and teen section that will help with that. And then I also, for adults resources, I have some electronic resources, and I found some podcasts that are really, that are focused on grief, but most of them, like the Dope Black Dads podcast and the Black People Go to Therapy.
That sounds awesome. Can you say that again? The Dope Black Dads?
Dope Black Dads podcast.
Oh, I gotta check that out.
Yeah, so they talk about the Black experience, but they have an episode about grief and grieving. So it's a place for parents, because I always think, I'm not a parent, but I always think that parents, you're really doing this for the first time. Like, no, nobody has a playbook to do this with. So maybe hearing something from other people and other Black people and will help you and help make you feel better as you are parenting, and you can parent more confidently and takes off a little bit of weight off your shoulders and stuff like that. So I wanted to include some options for that too. And then I talk about it And then I also, my second intervention was a volunteer training, some suggestions for the training that focused on kind of just really just focused on what microaggressions was. That was the only gap that I had identified in the volunteer training, and just kind of very specific language. So it was very small points with powerful meanings again. That microaggressions, they suck. They are absolutely the very worst. And if you're in a very vulnerable state, and or maybe you're not in a vulnerable state, but you still need help and guidance in your grieving process or to process a loss, microaggressions are probably the thing that you really don't need. It's the last thing that you need. So I talked about microaggressions and how to help people to understand what microaggressions are, what to look for, and what to avoid. So, and then my third intervention was a graphic, and that's just kind of explaining what Black grief is and just putting all of what these unique factors, kind of talking about what I had learned throughout my thesis overall. And yep. And then my final intervention was the grief seminar that I talked about a little bit before. And that was really, really absolutely amazing. I had a guest speaker, Michael Opoku Forfis. I probably didn't say his name right, but he is absolutely wonderful and was a super big help because he is a psychotherapist, and he did an amazing job, and he made a really valuable contribution to our conversation. So doing all those four things, and it sounds like a lot, but it really was a year-long process, so it wasn't as long. It wasn't like a one thing right at the end, but I gave all these interventions to Candace, and thanked her a million times over because this was not only a fantastic opportunity and gave me an opportunity to look at a social service, but also just to look at myself and how I do research and what type of research I want to do. And I liked being able to do research that kind of had an outcome and contributed to the conversation, but also I could see in the real world, they had real world implications. So I felt like it was of value, and I'm really, really happy that I was able to do something like that.
Well, it was definitely of value, you know, Delaney, and thank you so much for the awareness you garnered, the awareness you built within us about Black grief, some of the research you did, the Litrid reviews. And I loved how you brought forth microaggressions, because so often there's subversive, subtle, unconscious biases that are very destructive and harmful. Some of the statements include, like when we talk about microaggressions, we look at, you know, for example, a person of color is presumed to be dangerous, criminal, or deviant based mm-hmm. on their race, right? Or, you know, this is, I find applicable, strongly applicable to, not that any of them are not applicable, but this one is quite prominent, I think, in grief support, is that it occurs when somebody who's white is given preferential treatment, and that is sometimes in very subtle, subversive ways, meaning the way a grief support is designed and, you know, facilitated over a person of color. So thank you for all the work you've done. Can I revisit parts of it, especially your interventions? Because you had this poster about Black grief that's really impactful. I just want to ask you some questions about that. Is all right?
Oh, of course.
If you could expand a little bit on when it says, what is one of the captions in this wonderful poster is that, what is Black grief? It is understanding grief through ecological systems and cultural factors may influence the specific manifestations of the Black American grief experience. So a couple of pieces of that. Can you expand on what those specific manifestations of Black grief would be? And what are the ecological and cultural factors that influence those manifestations?
For sure. I kind of talked about it a little bit before. I probably referenced it somewhere in one of my rambles. But yeah, so for a lot of these different factors, I talk about it as social determinants of grief. And there are so many. There are very a large variety. We talk about it in my program a lot too, as social determinants of health and like what your economic status, different where you live. So many different things, like where you live, your geographical place in this world, where you come from originally, your culture, your background. So many different things impact the type of health care we receive, and that's what we call social determinants of health. And then there are social determinants of grief and those exact same things, but how they contribute to grief. And so that is kind of like a good way to kind of think about ecological systems and cultural factors. They are just all different variety of factors. So for me, and how I see like these specific manifestations of the Black American grief experience so many different things, but it's importantly that it's centered around Blackness and what it means to be Black in America. And it's going to manifest differently on a personal level and kind of what I talked about before and this community level grieving. And so what it is, we grieve as a community. I talked about it as the parasocial connection between someone we don't know and their and grieving for a life that we never even knew, never even come in contact with, never were connected with, but we are connected and we're connected because we are Black and visibly how our treatment within society does impact our connection. And that's the basis of our connection for Black Americans. So I think that is the best way that I could put it. It is very, again, all these things are very expensive.
Yeah, right. That's why you did a whole thesis on them, right? That's why you did your school for them. Yeah, like we can't cover this all in an hour podcast, right?
Yeah.
Although I want to. I want to keep you and just kind of like, you know, yeah.
But yeah, I hope that that helps people to understand kind of what it is. It goes a lot further than that. And ecological system specifically goes a lot further than that. But I think that is the best way to understand it so that people can understand it in their day to day.
I hear you, Delaney. I mean, in part of what we're doing right now and as a, you know, as a continuation of the work you've done with your thesis, it's bringing awareness that there is Black grief. There are these manifestations. There are these influences and factors that we have to take into account when we're designing, implementing, facilitating, and delivering grief support programs, let alone when it's in children's and youth grief. And if I could expand a little bit more on that, or ask you to expand a little bit more on that, my apologies, is that when you say Black bereavement is unique and contextual because of the variety of culture and social factors not represented in traditional grief studies. Can you speak, and I think this is part of your lit review, because I haven't seen, maybe in Canada, I don't know, in the US possibly, but in Canada, grief studies that speak to Black grief. They're usually traditional. They're usually by people who are white. They're usually for people who are white. You know, there's little research on the measures of inclusivity when it comes to grief studies. So can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, it is. I think right now it is becoming more looked at. There is more research occurring and there are current studies going on right now that are focused on it, and we're having more conversations about it. We're looking at Black grief because it is going, it's one of those things that's kind of inevitable. Like, you hopefully that people make strong, tangible, intimate connections with people within their lives and their family systems and their friends. And oftentimes that means that you will go through the process of grieving and loss. And so we're having this opportunity to look at Black grief specifically, and there are other researchers who are looking at it, and there are some, I believe it's at the University of Toronto, and I did see it somewhere, and I'm blanking on the name, unfortunately, but yeah, there are some going on right now where they are looked at it, but the traditional grief studies really does focus on just grief in general, not even to apply to a specific group at all, but the default group, which in research and in general is going to be white people, because that is the dominant group of people within the society, and they're the majority of group of people in the society, and they were the researchers directing the research, they were the participants, that's what is the reflection of previous most of the time of what traditional grief studies look like. And that's why social work in general was built in whiteness, the same way a lot of these systems are within North America. And so they don't account for a lot of people, and they don't account for what Canada looks like today. And they're not focused in Canada today. They're just kind of building on what Canada was decades ago. So I think that looking what people are doing now is really, really valuable. And we're starting to take that time to kind of focus on Black grief specifically, and to focus on these intersections where race and certain social issues converge. So there's so many different instances where you live your life as a person, as a Black person for me, but you also have to deal with all these things, and your Blackness is not erased in those moments, and you're just a person for that. You're, again, you're a Black person all the time. And so pulling from those ideas, I think that we're having a shift in research where people are starting to understand that this is very valuable, crucial, essential work, and that the work from before, while it did have valuable contributions, doesn't really fit in today's society where there's so many different people, different backgrounds, and different issues because of we are building on what was previously done.
Beautifully said. Absolutely. Now, moving forward in that regard, I just got to revisit this. I love how you said, or you spoke to this aspect of how things used to be done, how the programs have been built on a different demographic of peoples that marginalized, excluded, ignored demographics of people, including people, obviously people of color and who are indigenous, who are black. But moving forward, in terms of grief support, you know, the model at Lighthouse and a lot of the models around the city and greater Toronto area are groups, peer support groups. Do interracial groups of support work? Do we need to have groups that are focused on particular demographics of people because it's facilitated by somebody from that demographic of people? How do you see this all? Because, you know, I mean, not-for-profit grief support is so resource poor. Like there's just not enough resources, the capacity, all that kind of stuff. How do you see this possibly, if we blue sky it, how do you see this working or possibly working? Or what does it need to work to be able to be more inclusive of grief and bereavement support across the sector?
Yeah, no, I love that. That's a great question because I don't think it's like a red pill, blue pill kind of thing. It can't be one way or the other. I heard this when I was in university and it was one of the first things that I remember one of my profs saying that it's most of the time when you're someone saying, is it this way or this way? It's often a mix of both. And I think that is really true for what this looks like. My contribution to what I did within my thesis is not to say that I want specifically things for just like grief support sessions just for Black people, all Black people to come together. But that is valuable for some people. Like for me, when I like I guess it depends. It really does depend. If I think for people within certain areas, like if you come from a predominantly Black area, like I'm thinking in my head right now, because I was watching a few movies, like if I'm thinking about very like marginalized areas, like within America, like there probably it'd be of value to have somebody who is like, if it was specifically just black men and they're talking about grief related to police brutality and violence, I think that you can, it is helpful in some instances to have someone who is a black individual leading that conversation. But as long as you are putting people's voices and there is a black voice in that conversation, I think that is always helpful. It doesn't look like one way or another. There is of much value in having black led discussions and black led sessions and support sessions for black people. And I know that is of value because I talked about it a little bit in one of my resources for the Lit Review where it was young black men. And I think for me, and I'm just reading a book now called Hood Feminism, highly, highly recommend it.
Can you repeat that and maybe the author?
Oh yeah, for sure. Let me find the author. Give me 1 second. Cause I was literally just reading it a second ago. Okay. It's Miki Kendall.
Okay. Miki and the title Kendall, of the book again?
Oh, sorry. Hood Feminism written by Miki Kendall. I recommend it so much. I'm not finished it yet, but even just what I was reading, how we talk about specifically like police brutality, how women are left out of that conversation and how oftentimes a lot of black women are hurt within the crossfire or killed or murdered in the crossfire during those instances. And so even when we're having these conversations about what black grief is, we're talking a lot about black men and we're talking related to police brutality. That's the conversation. So you're still leaving somebody out. So I will never say that it should be one way or another. I will always expand the conversation and I guess make it more accessible to more people and hope that there are instances where some conversations and some support is black led, but also is of value because to have things that aren't led by Black people, but are still inclusive and inviting and friendly and welcoming and supporting of Black people. And I think that's important too, because we don't exist on our own. We're not by ourselves. I'm not a Black woman who just exists with all Black people. Like my closest and best friends are all of different nationalities and backgrounds and even different economic status. Like, we're all different, and that's what makes our lives beautiful. And like, that's why we love having conversations with each other, because my best friend is going to see something the way I didn't even see. And she'll know about what terms and things are okay or not okay for me to use. And I can tell her vice versa, or like, you know what I mean? Like, but most of the time my friends are really awesome, and most of them just know it, and they know better, and they want to have those conversations, and it's a lot easier. But there's a lot of people who don't want to have those conversations. So if I can say I wouldn't choose one way or the other, I would just kind of try and expand the conversation so that everybody can feel included. And that is a very, very hard task and a very, very big ask, but in a blue sky world, that's what it would look like for me.
Thank you, Delaney. I appreciate your blue skying and those nuggets of wisdom. And I couldn't agree more. I mean, especially with a capacity strapped, a resource strapped service like grief and bereavement across the sector, it's challenging to create, you know, how can I say, very specific program. I don't even know if it's necessary. I think what we've been doing at Lighthouse for Grieving Children is collaborating with demographics of peoples and communities to share knowledge and help them build their own programming within their community, because they know their communities best, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the model that is, like, from a culturally humble approach, that's the model that seems to work best, because then it's having, you know, the sharing of knowledge, but also having, you know, for lack of better terminology, the appropriate people facilitating and supporting that can serve as a measure of connection and trust and safety that to lead these supportive measures, especially within grief and bereavement, and then especially within children's grief and youth grief, regardless of the nature of the death.
Yeah, I think that's wonderfully put, because I was, again, in this Hood Feminism book by Mickey Kendall. She says that different groups of feminism, specifically Black feminists, and should work in partnership with feminism, because feminism is also based in whiteness. So that's kind of the idea that you brought to mind when you said that, because it's like White Lighthouse works in partnership with these communities and helps to support them in the ways that, and gives them the resources and the knowledge that they need, and then they can flourish and take what resonates with them, and then turn it around and direct it how it's going to best benefit their community. And I think that is absolutely wonderful. And it's one of my favorite things about how you guys operate.
Yeah, without a doubt, Delaney. I mean, feminism was based in whiteness. And then I love how you brought forth that a lot of the Black, not a lot, but much of the Black grief, when we talk about police brutality and gun violence and what have you, is focused on Black men. But then, mm-hmm. you know, a demographic of people that are marginalized at that within those groups are Black women, right? I love that you brought that forth from a feminist perspective and from a grief and bereavement perspective. Well said.
Thank you.
So it's intricate, isn't it? I mean, I really appreciate, you know, younger, smarter minds like you taking this on, because it is, you're so right. It's so big, and it needs a lot of research and a lot of patience and a lot of, you know, higher thinking and collaboration. And it's individuals, esteemed individuals like yourself, brilliant individuals like yourself, Delaney, that are going to make these kinds of changes in the world. And I love how you could feel the passion in how you speak to it as a Black woman, as a student, as a scholar, as a champion of social justice within our ranks. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. This is like the one area of all that I love, but anything that's like, that challenges social structures and helps to make it better for other people, especially like looking at disability and housing crisis. Like, you can take anything and I'll probably speak the same way to it, because they intersect so much. And as many as I'm very, very lucky that I am only one of so many people, so many students that have graduated from McMaster and from other universities this year who are passionate about social change and seeing that. So it makes me feel very empowered just as like a woman and an individual to graduate with so many other people who are doing or are just as passionate as I am about so many other areas. And it makes me really excited for a really beautiful, bright future.
Yeah, it takes champions, right? It takes a multitude of champions who are passionate. And there's one thing, Delaney, to talk about something. There's quite another to be able to articulate information and knowledge that's digestible to others and hopefully to affect that change, right?
Yeah, for sure. I 100% agree.
Anything else you'd like to share with us, Delaney?
I think that if there are so many instances where people don't recognize the impact of grieving. But I think there's a lot that grieving is not just something that we just experience as just an emotion. I think it's so much bigger than that. And so when we look at things like Black grief specifically, we have to use those points as well. So when I was talking a little bit about these different factors and different social determinants of grief and grieving, that's why I speak to them, because there's so many things that so many different places and areas in our life that grief comes along with us for the ride. And I'm not sure if you've watched what is it called, is it Human Resources? It's a spin-off show of Big Mouth, and they have an episode, as much as it's a kind of a crude show, it's not for everybody, but they do a really good job about talking about emotions. And that, like, they have, I forget, it's this little guy, he's like a little sweater, and you have to go through it. You have to go through it. You can't put it aside. And it's like grief, that's exactly what grief is. You cannot put it aside. You can't ignore it. You just have to put on that sweater, and you got to carry it with you.
Couldn't agree more. Delaney, you're speaking our language. Grief has a way of transforming our entire lives, our perception, the way we feel. And so much of grief and grieving somaticizes, right? And, and that's either death-related or even non-death-related losses.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Delaney, thank you so much for your time. I mean, we can go on and on in terms of all that received from you and your learning. I can't wait to see what you're going to do moving forward in terms of your career, especially as it aligns with your values, your morals, and your life vocation. But thank you so much for your time today.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Our honor, our pleasure. For more information about Lighthouse for Grieving Children, please visit us at www.lighthousegriefsupport.org, or you could find us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Thank you, folks. This has been the Lighthouse Beacon Podcast. Thank you for listening, and take good care.